post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to the near post. My name is Fitzham, and with me I've got Russell Gibbs and Michelle Bertrand. How are you going, Russell?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Good, thanks. And how are you going, Michelle?
Hi, Australia. I'm well, thank you.
And what have we got today, Michelle?
Well, coming up in the first half hour, we've got Alex Tobin on his FFA coaching scholarship, and Matilda's coach Tom Samani talks to us on the difference between Mark Viduka and Cheryl Salisbury, and no comment from you, Ross. And we'll have got all the big issues and quiz dedications.
Excellent. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, we can be contacted via email on nearpost2xx@gmail.com. And the podcast is available on nearpost.blogspot.com. And as usual, today's we've got a dedication, and the dedication goes out to the Joeys.
Manners, you're listening to the Near Post on the Australian Community Radio Network. You want me to say it in English?
Yeah, well done to the Joeys, though. They were the first ever Australian team to win a championship or to win a trophy in Asia. They beat Bahrain on penalties after drawing 1-1, and they scored, I think, an 83rd minute. That was, and the scorer was Mark Warren. So well done to the Joeys. I guess from here we've also got the big issue for this week. Being that players versus clubs, I guess, contract issue, the big issue with, for example, Cristiano Ronaldo and players like that. What do you think? What do you think about the stuff that's going on, Russell?
In terms of the transfers?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Clubs versus players deciding whether their contracts are worth anything these days. My general opinion is that clubs sign players on 4 or 5 year contracts now, just for the reason that they don't want to lose them for free at the end of their contract. And specifically a player like Cristiano Ronaldo, he can command a hefty fee for Manchester United. If they can sign him and keep him to his contract for another 4 years, then at the end of that, obviously he could go for free. But if Real Madrid want to come in and pay for him, then evidently they're going to have to pay the cash.
And what do you think, Michelle?
Well, what if the player's not happy anymore? So I don't know. That comes into play as well, whether you want to keep the club, want to keep someone that's not happy at the club and not really playing, whether let them go.
Yeah, what happens, I guess, sometimes is that the club doesn't want a player, they don't want to keep him for a minute, they get rid of him when they don't want him. And I guess to some extent the player's also got a right to decide when things aren't going their way, they can just get up and go. But it looks like at the moment the contract is, as Russell said, that it's basically a guarantee of some sort of income at the end of the player deciding to leave, or the club trying to get rid of a player. A lot of the times when the club is getting rid of a player, the fee isn't that that critical. But I guess when in Cristiano Ronaldo's case, it seems that a big factor is how much money they're going to get out of him.
I suppose if they've got their contracts in place, then of course we're not going to have the situation where players can just up and leave, as you say, and we might get a club like Sydney FC, for example, in the A-League, just taking all the best players from all the other clubs when they've decided that, yes, I don't want to be here anymore, there's nothing to tie me here, no contract, I'll just go and play for Sydney FC.
True, and the other case to that is that club like Adelaide United, who's been able to offload Bruce Gitte and Nathan Burns, I'm sure they got a bit of money from that, and I guess having a contract has been to their advantage.
I heard Bruce Gitte was one of the highest.
Yeah, I think
Australia.
It was around the $200,000 mark, so that's a big thing for an Australian club. But I guess at the end of the day, you know, what does a contract mean to a player? A contract means different to a player than to a club. I guess a player has a contract to ensure he gets certain money. And even on the transfers, I know that players get a certain amount of that
10%.
Transfer fee as well. Yeah. So I don't know. It's
well, a contract is there. I guess it needs to be honoured in most cases, but I guess there are some other stuff that may come into it.
Like I say, it does stop clubs courting other players. I mean, obviously, if you've got a club that wants someone badly, but I mean, in the case of Ronaldo, whether he's just using the interest from Real Madrid to score himself a bigger pay rise at Manchester United will remain to be seen.
Which has happened with other players before him?
My personal opinion is it is a bit of a smokescreen. I think he will go to Real Madrid at some stage in the future, but I don't think it'll be this season.
Yeah, well, I think the club's done the right thing by him. They brought him in young. He's still very young. And I think it's got to be a certain level of loyalty as well. And I think that what Sepp Blatter said a couple of weeks ago is something that someone in his position shouldn't have said. I think he's got the wrong idea of slavery, I think.
Absolutely.
If you're earning £130,000 a week, I don't think how you can be a slave. Slave to the game, maybe, but not to a club or not to. He can get up and go at any time as long as the other clubs are willing to pay the fee. So I think Sepp Blatter's opinion or his opinion of what this is kind of a bit out of the.
It's a little strange coming out with a comment like that. I mean, they do play a lot of games in Europe, and if you play for Manchester United or a team like that, or a Chelsea or an Arsenal or a big team like Real Madrid, for example, you're going to play a lot of games because your team's going to be successful. You're going to have lots of opportunities in cup runs and that. And last year, I don't know how many games Ronaldo would have played exactly, but it would have been a lot.
Yeah.
But that's why he's paid that sort of money.
Exactly, and I think he's still young. So, I mean, he can go and play for a lower division team and get paid $30,000. £30,000 a week and play only 50 games a year. But I'm sure he doesn't want to do that. He wants to play in Champions League. He wants to play at the highest level there is. And if that's what he wants to do, I think he's got to... the fee has got to suit the performance.
Maybe he's holding out for a spot in the new Canberra A-League team.
That would be something. I don't know if...
Could be our marquee signing.
I think the Jets would love him.
Yes, I guess that's the big issue, and I think I don't know if we've reached any conclusion there, but we agree that there's a grey area in contract.
But let us know what you think, Australia. Send us an email. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Definitely, definitely.
From Perth Glory to the Central Coast, from Melbourne Victory, hear the Queensland roar. This is the Near Post, going coast to coast. The Near Post, get there first
if it's for football. Still to come for Canberra listeners, we've got we've got an interview with Alex Tobin on his youth coaching scholarship that he's won. So we've got here's what Alex has to say.
Alex Tobin, former Socceroo and development manager with the Central Coast Mariners, and his. I'm talking to Alex Tobin, former Socceroo and development manager with the Central Coast Mariners, and he's just been announced as the one of the four scholarship holders with the FFA Coaching Development Scheme. Alex, can you tell us a little bit about the coaching scheme?
Well, it's a great opportunity for me and the other candidates to, improve our coach education. The FFA have seen the wisdom in the idea of basically... developing hopefully career coaches, something that I would like to be, and I'm sure the other guys and girl would have similar ambitions to to be involved in a full-time basis for a long time in coaching. Part of it is certainly to travel and to increase our education through knowledge of European systems and South American or wherever we should be involved.
So you actually be encouraged to go to other countries and look at their coaching systems?
Yes, very much so. We had our interviewing processes last week, and they were very keen on the idea of forging links with European clubs, with European associations, with national associations, and also in South America. But also, importantly, that they asked what we would like to do, and from my point of view, I'd wanted to be involved in the national team setups. There's obviously a number of national teams that the FFA now represent, but to be a fly on the wall, I guess, in terms of some of those trips and some of those camps and some of those training sessions would be a benefit for me.
Now, the football community have often questioned, the next Dutch coach that has been appointed at whatever level. So it's great to see that yourself and Paul O'Connor and others are gaining that experience under these Dutch guys.
Exactly. I think those appointments of, of Dutch coaches, with great pedigree, we can all learn from them. And I think that's important that you, no matter what you do and no matter who you appoint, you need to be able to create a legacy from that. You know, you need to be able to educate, as many as you can, from my discussions with Pim in the past. He's very open to that. He's not the sort of coach that sort of hides away and refuses to let on what he's actually going through. And I think from an Australian point of view, it's beneficial that myself and others, can learn it with that experience, and hopefully be better coaches ourselves, and hopefully spread the word. It's all about communication.
And then one final question: you've played under lots of coaches in your time. Who was the coach who most inspired or influenced you?
Ooh, very good question. I'd put down two names, I think. Zoran Matic from Adelaide City, because he coached me for more than 10 years and was certainly an influence, certainly in my younger years, probably older years by the end of it. From the national team point of view, certainly Terry Venables had a short reign with the Socceroos, but I certainly learned a lot from him as well. And certainly two names, but I hope and I'm sure that I actually benefited from every coach that I was coached for.
Zoran Matic, one of the great coaches of Australian football. Just give us a quick insight, just one thing that you would have said that his tone or his manner that he would have picked up.
Yeah, his tone, his manner, he's very intense. Perhaps the most intense individual I think I've ever come across, to the point where he actually bandsawed his finger off, one morning, and turned up for training, that afternoon, with all the, obviously you lose a finger, that's a pretty major thing, he basically wouldn't miss a training session. He was that committed to training that he turned up. He should have been in hospital, but there he was, kicking balls at our goalkeeper, and a shocking sight to see. He really shouldn't have been there, but he's committed to training, and I think he invoked the same sort of response from his players, that they were committed as well.
Alex Tobin, we wish you all the success, and maybe one day we'll see you as a Socceroos coach. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was Alex Tobin. Thanks to Alex. One thing that we've skipped over this today is the normal quiz question, and I've got one set up for Russell and Michelle. And the question goes, how many imports currently registered to play in the A-League, and can you name at least five?
Do you want to take this first?
Well, I heard that there's about quite a few actually this year. And lucky, because of the A-League pre-season, we've got quite a few of them that scored. So they've sort of made a bit of the news. I've got Cristiano, Fabio,
yeah.
Trinidad, and
from
the
Perth.
And the one who got the red card, the South Korean player, Hook Sung Seo. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yep. That's right. And what about you, Russ?
Ji Hyung Sung from the Central Coast Mariners. And
from Newcastle, you mean?
Yes, that's what I meant.
Central Coast is the only team without
them.
Yeah,
the Central Coast without them. And Grant Brebner at Melbourne.
Yep.
But there's probably lots.
Yeah,
Vargas?
There's approximately about 20. And Sydney FC have got a couple. Mike Anfield from the United States Terry McFlynn from Ireland. Northern Ireland.
I was just going to ask, who's got the most?
Well, it looks like at the moment Perth, Melbourne have got five each. We've got Perth with James Robinson from England, Eugene Dade from Ivory Coast, Trinidad, Adrian Trinidad from Ivory Coast as well, Amarel from Brazil, and Eugene Dade from Ivory Coast, I think. And we've got also Melbourne, we've got two players from Costa Rica, Carlos Hernandez and Jose Luis Lopez. Grant Brebner, as Russ said it earlier, Ney Fabiano. And also the Newcastle Jets Queensland have also got Hugh Cisson, Michelle that mentioned earlier, and Serge Van Dijk, the new import from Holland. And the Wellington Phoenix have got Daniel from Brazil and Lele Gao from China. So it looks like, I'm sure there's going to be a couple more during the next couple of weeks before the season starts. But that's about 20 that I can think of.
Judging on the A-League pre-season, it's looking promising.
Oh, definitely. A few goals scored.
There certainly was. I've got some results here from the weekend, if people hadn't heard them. In Perth Glory 1, Newcastle Jets 1. Trinidad scoring for Perth there. That's where we got that one from, I think. Sydney FC 2, Queensland Raw 1. Payne and Prentice for Sydney. Van Dijk scoring for Queensland, another one of the imports. And it was all Brazilian affair in the second group there, I believe, was it? Melbourne Victory 1, Adelaide 2, Cristiano with a couple on debut and Fabiano for Melbourne.
Yeah.
And Wellington Phoenix beating the Mariners 1-0 with a goal from Daniel. But I think what we were more than impressed with, rather than the actual results, was the scale of the crowds.
Definitely for a pre-season, as an average of, I think...
4,000.
Looking at it, close to 4,000 per game. I think that speaks... That speaks volumes for how the A-League is going.
What about the crowd in Wellington? Was that in Wellington?
4,853. Yeah, just under 5,000. So that's brilliant. I mean, in the first season, Auckland couldn't bring, 2,000 people into the normal season game. So the pre-season game is attracting just under 5,000 in New Zealand. The same in the Melbourne Victory and Adelaide game, which was 4,700, actually. And the Sydney FC and... Queensland Raw game as well, 4,222. The lowest crowd was in Perth, which was 3,800, but I think that's still pretty good.
Yeah, and it looks good for the Melbourne Victory as well, because I think that was a nearly 5,000 crowd in Tasmania.
That's
which,
right.
Which can only
that's
help right. their boost for an A-League bid as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And it happens that 3 Brazilians score in Tasmania, so from the 2 teams. So that was definitely a good start for the A-League.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've also got some more news there.
Yeah, just talking a bit about the Canberra A-League Foundation memberships that were launched last Thursday morning down at the Members Service Bank, I believe it was, at Bailey's Corner. Service 1 Members Banking Branch, that was the one. Senator Kate Lundy was there, Shadow Minister for Sport Brendan Smythe, Capital Football President John Logue and Capital Football CEO Heather Reid were amongst the people that were there. And if people want to get involved and support the Canberra A-League bid, 5,000 members are required, $200 each for a foundation membership. You can go into any one Service 1 members banking branch throughout the ACT. They're available at the Australian National University, Belconnen, Civic, Deakin, Tuggeranong, University of Canberra, Woden, Calvary Hospital, the Canberra Hospital and Queanbeyan. So throughout the ACT, we'd encourage people to get down there and sign up.
Definitely, this is a chance for Canberra.
So come on, Canberrans, let's get a team in the capital.
And coming up next, we've got an interview with Tom Samani.
You know, when you look at the Matildas calendar, I think, and I did a rough calculation, I think we've been together this year already for something like between 120 and 130 days. And that's and when we say we're together. It's not like a professional team where you train for a couple of hours and then you go home and whatever. That's 120 days training together, eating together, living together, being overseas most of the time or interstate.
You've been involved with lots of men's teams coaching. Mm. How does that, Tommy, then, obviously that's a big difference between the women's team. Obviously the Socceroos would come together for a few weeks maybe at most or maybe only a couple of days. Mm. So how does that work out then for you as a manager of people? What are the key differences between managing a Matildas team and, say, and the Canberra Cosmos or, you know?
There are. I think it's just you're dealing with the team. Well, I think there's some differences by coaching a men's and differences between coaching a men's and a women's team. Not in a football sense, but in a management sense and how you have to deal with players and the dynamics of the team structure.
What are the sort of the key, a generalisation?
The generalisation is that you need to communicate more often with your female players. You need to give them more information. You need to be more in the mix with them and what's going on. They're much more social group. And when I say social, I don't mean socialising, going out and partying. I mean socialising, interaction.
Is that partly because of the way that they're also together for 160 days, 24 hours a day, whereas a men's team tend to come together for a few hours and then clear off?
That's part of it. But it's also, I think, part of a difference between a male and a female. Yeah. You know, females, as we all know, talk a lot more.
Yeah, we don't talk.
We don't get a chance to.
No, never.
it's much more, there's much more interaction, whereas male players, they'll do their training, they'll eat the meal, they might not say a word, they'll disappear, and you won't, even if you're on tour with them, you won't see them in between things. Whereas a female group, there's much more interaction, so you need to be comfortable with that and keep, just keep the pulse of that going, if you like, and know what's happening within the team. You know, there's other advantages. I mean, a female team's far more resilient and self-sufficient as well, in a strange way. You don't need to lead them by the hand type of thing. For a male player, you need to kind of, or a male team, you need to be probably a lot more structured in saying, right, this happens then, this happens then, this happens then. with a female team, you can actually, you know, sort of give them some guidelines and work from there. Right. And they can actually organise things. You know, I've always said one of the differences between a male and a female team is that if you want somebody to organise and get a birthday card signed, it's a lot easier with a female team.
You mean you're Mark Radikas and your Harry Kewell's aren't so, wouldn't be so good on that, you don't think?
No, the guys are just like, how do I do that, you know? So the dynamics in the teams are a bit different. The management of them is a bit different. But so the actual football element isn't.
So it's easier to manage, you would imagine. Oh, from what you're saying there, it's probably easier.
Different. I don't think it's easier to manage
a women's team.
No, I don't think it's necessarily easier. I think it's different.
Yep.
Because the other thing with a women's team is that they worry more. They get more involved in things that men don't really care about.
Okay.
So you need to keep on top of those things a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, they tend to get they'll tend to get upset about things that guys won't even know happened.
Yeah.
So it's just different. A real sport in its own right.
Its own identity, yeah. Tell me, with the Matildas, have you been in touch with them since you've been back, or what's the sort of situation?
A little bit. They're starting to get edgy. It's a strange thing, because we've been together so often, the players are kind of getting edgy, because this is probably the longest we've been apart this
right,
year.
Yeah.
And it's strange. You know, people talk about it's like one big family, and people think, you know, it's one big happy family, but if families go, there's never a happy family. You're always having disputes, and it's kind of like that in our team. We got on really well together as a team. The team really is unbelievably easy to manage. You know, we have our issues as everything, as every team does and every family does, but it got to such a stage now, the players are sort of saying, you know, well, when are we getting back together, when is something happening?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't seen Alicia for like 2 or 3 weeks now, and all that. So they're getting edgy.
And I guess a really roller coaster emotional ride for the team. In the, you know, they've been together through the World Cup, they've done all that, and then you come back and you go back to your own stage, and it's like, well,
what do you do?
It's kind of hard to handle those sort of situations, aren't they?
It is a bit, but again, I think our players are fairly resilient at handling those, and I think that's the good thing, you know. And it's one of the things I enjoy about coaching this team, is that they're not actually full-time professional players, and we work around that, in the sense that we run the team in the sense that, you know, you don't do football 24 hours a day, even when you're in with the team. You know, you have to live a life outside of a football team.
Yeah.
So hopefully that makes it a bit easier when they sort of come back and they have to get back into the real life again.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom Samani, and I think from what he's talked about there are some differences between coaching male and female players. What do you guys think?
Well, we had it down on our sheet as what's the difference between Mark Viduka and Cheryl Salisbury, and I'm rather cruel, so I said one's a top quality international footballer that puts her all in, and the other one's Mark Viduka.
But,
no offence there, we're only joking.
Yeah, well...
Well, if you agree with Russ, let us know. Email us. Well, football, women's football in Australia is one of the biggest growing sports, so we probably do need more coaches. So if you're out there and inspired by Tom, so give it a go.
Oh, definitely. I think it seems that, especially from what Tom has said, is that the Matildas spend together a lot more time as a team than our Socceroos do, and it looks like that there is a closer connection with the Matildas players than more than you would expect with, I guess, other teams, and that shows their success in the World Cup and the success since then as well. So good luck to them, and they've done well. Yeah,
it's interesting that he said that there's some parts of the game that the women take away that the men wouldn't even know it happened, which would be interesting to find out what parts they are and whether it's something that the men could really work on.
Possibly, even as in coming together in a social aspect of the game. From Tom said that it'd be harder to organise anything outside of the actual training session with the male players than the female players. So, yeah, no, definitely. we've also got some news. We can start with Michelle.
Well, to follow on from that, the Matildas will be playing Japan in a friendly.
That's correct, and that's the same day where the Olyroos will also be playing the Japan under-23 team, and that's a doubleheader that will be played in Japan, I think, on the 24th.
Yeah, in Kobe, in Japan there, and Tom Samani, who we just heard from, was named a strong looking Matilda's squad.
Is that televised?
No, it's not. No. Also in the A League, Sydney FC's John Aloisi is out for 6 weeks. There was a talk of him not playing a lot of games a couple of weeks ago. It'll just be on and off the bench, but it looks like he's actually going to miss out of the whole of the preseason, likely. So, well, good luck to John.
I think Sydney FC really need to get out there in the transfer market at the moment to get another. I think they're missing a one player. I believe that they need to get a quality midfielder in their squad.
And a striker as well, I think.
Well, especially if Aloisi's out for 6 weeks, maybe the football superstar, if he's coming through, whoever he may be, might get an early
that
opportunity.
That could be an option, definitely.
That's right, because they beat the football superstar, beat the Mariners, didn't they? Oh, the
youth team.
The youth team, 3-0. Yeah. So that's pretty good for a team who hasn't been together.
Absolutely, and they won again. Yeah. I saw last week on the TV they beat Man United.
Yeah, well, that's a Premier League New South Wales team.
I believe this week on the show that they're playing the AIS here in Canberra.
That's right.
Correct.
So that'll be interesting to watch. One. Yeah, that's Thursday, 7:30.
And then the other news is that Mark Bosnich is on a 2-week trial with the Central Coast Mariners, and Central Coast being my team, hopefully he'll do well and stay there.
We'd love to see Bozzy back. He's missed out a fair bit of his career through one indiscretion or another. After he shed a lot of promise at Manchester United and Aston Villa. And then sort of fell away. Had a spell with Queen's Park Rangers, I believe, last year.
That's right.
So to see Bozzy back, let's hope he can get fit and sharp, and he'd be a good acquisition for Central
Coast. He looks all right. I saw him training on TV, and it looks like he's still got the skills there. I think he probably needs to lose a couple of kilos here and there, but I'm sure he'll if he gets
the
contract.
He seems to have the attitude, though.
Definitely. I think he's trying to make up for what he's missed out on, I guess.
Good luck to him.
Yeah.
And the Socceroos news, Brett Emerton has extended his contract at Blackburn Rovers, agreeing for a new 4-year deal with the club.
So. Yeah, he's impressed by Paul Ince and he thinks he's going to do well, so he's decided to stay there. So good luck to him. And the other news is that the FFA will announce the 8 successful women's teams to start in the new league in October, and one of that could be Canberra.
Fingers crossed it'll be a Canberra side. I believe that the announcement will be made sometime on Monday.
Yep. So, on that note, thanks very much to Capital Football. Thanks, Russ and Michelle. And coming up for our Canberra listeners, we've got... Michelle?
We've got Luisa Marzotto, which will provide and the full Premier League wrap. So stay tuned, Canberra listeners. But if you want to get all the football news, get to the Near Post.
Get there first.
The Near Post. Get there first. Don't get there second. Don't get there third. The Near Post. Get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The Near Post. Get there. Get there first.
Good evening. Welcome to Capital Football's Half an Hour Radio Show. We're here once again for another week. Haven't been booted off air just yet. Obviously, those with the powers not listening to us. So here we are another week. It's the 22nd of July. It's wet and cold. It's a typical Canberra winter's evening. But in the studio today, it's always hot and warm. And we're joined once again by Russ Gibbs. Welcome, Russ.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here again, as always.
And... as mentioned, we got a very special guest this evening, Luisa Marzotto, Western Creek goalkeeper, joins us in the studio.
Thanks.
But before we kick things off, usually we'll take a look at the news headlines at the top of the hour. We have a chat with Luisa about everything with Club Pink Premier League and potential Women's National League. We take a look at all the action from the weekend. And if you've got any Canberra football stories you'd like to share with us, please email the show at media@capitalfootball.com.au. And you can catch the podcast on the blog at www.nearspot.blogspot.com. Nearpost.blogspot.com even. I'm sure that first one won't work, so don't go there. But I believe, Russ, you've got all the news headlines.
Certainly do, and we can start with the Canberra A-League Foundation memberships, which are now available. The We need to get 5,000 members at $200 a piece. The launch was last Thursday. Senator Kate Lundy, Shadow Minister for Sport Brendan Smythe, and Capital Football President John Logue and CEO Heather Reid were there. There's branches of the Service One members banking branches available throughout the ACT, Australian National University, Belconnen, Civic, Deakin, Tuggeranong, University of Canberra, Woden, Calvary Hospital, the Canberra Hospital and Queanbeyan. Would encourage people to get there and sign up, Chris.
Look, there's no excuse. There's one everywhere. So there should be one just around the corner from wherever you are. Right now, obviously, they're close. They go in the morning. But Ivan Slavich just cannot, I guess, emphasize the importance of these foundation memberships. He needs all the financial support and community support he can get.
Everybody that's signed up now needs to, if they've got the funds, to step forward and become a part of it and show that we can talk about it, but we can't just talk about it, we can make it happen.
Exactly, and it's only $200, you know. Don't fill up the car for a week, walk somewhere, I don't know. It's not that much.
Couple of bits of international news. The Qantas Joeys, who we dedicated the national show to just a moment ago, they won the Asian Under-16 Youth Championship after winning a 5-4 sudden-death penalty shootout against Bahrain in Jakarta on the weekend. Mark Warren's 83rd-minute goal levelling for the Qantas Joeys, who went on to win on penalties. And local guys Chris Bush and Ben Harrington were involved in the squad. Ben, unfortunately, didn't get on the field in the final, but Chris did, played for 77 minutes, and that's a super performance from the Under-16s.
Yeah, look, it's a great win. Any win in China, or anyone in Asia, is great, and you know, it's good to see the future of Australian football succeeding in Asia already and putting a stamp on the game.
Certainly is. And staying with the Asian game, the China have defeated the Qantas under-23s in Changchun. A goal 12 minutes from time from Zhao Zhiyi defeated the Qantas under-23s, for whom Nikola Topostani played. This is a build-up, obviously, to the Olympics, Chris. There's a fairly strong Qantas under-23s lineup. Where do you think they go from here?
Look, you can't take too much out of the game. China's going to be very strong, obviously, being host of the Olympics. This is something they've been working on for quite a while. We saw Australia quite strong when it came to the Olympics in Sydney. So the host nations are always going to be strong for their home Olympics. And I suppose you've just got to not get too discouraged and step up the next week.
I mean, it's a good hit out for them, I suppose, to start with. And
absolutely,
they do follow up with another game this Thursday at the home stadium, Kobe, against the Japanese, which will be an interesting match. And preceding that game is the Matildas against Japan in a friendly match for the... obviously, they didn't make the Olympics, but Japan, I believe, are there. Three Canberrans in the Matilda squad: Lydia Williams, the goalkeeper, Amy Chapman and Caitlin Munoz.
The three usuals continuing to shine on the international stage, which is great to see, but... It just goes to show where the Matildas stand in on the national or the international scene these days. Getting friendlies all over the place is a great sign.
And speaking of those three, Chris, is there any further news you may be able to bring us on the Women's A-League bid?
Well, look, it's all rumour at the moment. Unfortunately, we don't hear any news until possibly next week. Word is coming from the FFA that all signs are looking good. If you're Magic 8-Ball and you shook it, it would say signs pointing to yes. So... It's things are very positive. As I said, we won't find out till next week, but the W League is looking like it's on the cards.
So this time next week, we could well be mentioning this quite a lot and having a long chat about it.
Well, this time next week, let's hope we have a half an hour show dedicated to the W League.
I think so.
But just one quick thing. The Canberra Times were reporting early in the week that we mentioned the A-League bid and the foundation memberships. Ivan Slavich also received great news, with a potential consortium interested in providing a very, very generous sum of money for the bid. So that's great news to see that ball rolling there too.
Yeah, I mean, the more people that get on board this, the better it's going to be for the Canberra community and the Canberra football team as a whole. We've had a lot of response on the website. When Damon went out and about before the Central Coast Newcastle game, you may have heard it last week, he had a lot of positive responses from a wide cross-section of the Canberra football community. I think everybody's keen to get involved and, as we said moments ago, get down and sign up and get a membership.
And just finishing things off, junior youth and senior coaching courses are coming up in the next 3 months. So make sure you email coaching@capitalfootball.com.au or call Alex Butt on 6260-4000 if you want any information regarding those coaching courses even. But I believe that wraps up the news for this evening. It's been certainly an action-packed week, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. I mean, and there's a lot of like international news going on there. Even though it's the build-up to the A-League and it hasn't kicked off yet, there's certainly never-ending stop amount of football.
No, never a dull moment in the world game, is there?
I'm Amy Chapman from the Matildas, and you're listening to The Near Post on 2XX 98.3 FM.
And as mentioned at the top of the show, we're joined by a very special guest this evening. Louisa sits across the desk from us, looking all warm there.
Thanks, Chris.
But as mentioned, the potential Women's National League. You yourself, you're a former AIS goalkeeper, you now play in the Club Pink Premier League. Is this something that's of interest to you?
Definitely. It's been, I think, going on 3 years now since we've had a National League. And I think with all the preparation that the Academy's done through the AIS, building up the players, it'd be definitely something that I would be looking at. I haven't been there, you know, in sort of amongst all the elite athletes, but I think that I can get through it. Hopefully give Lydia Williams a bit of a run. Keep her on her toes a little bit, I guess.
Now, is this something, I suppose, now you can, I guess, work towards? We're wrapping the Club Pink Premier League season up very quickly. There's about 5 rounds left. But will this provide a bit more motivation going towards the end of the season and into the finals, knowing that potentially there's something further?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm fully focused on what my team's doing with the with the Club Pink. Getting into the finals, obviously, is a big thing. But also for myself, performing well, training well, as much as I can try and get to training with work commitments is very difficult. However, it is a good preparation for me to start looking at the A-League, sort of fine-tuning myself, my sort of skills that I've been lacking lately. But, yeah, definitely something to look forward to.
We've not really been lacking much in terms of keeping the ball out of the net there, Louisa. I understand you've had 8 clean sheets this season. And Weston Creek, we've been talking about it a lot, only conceded 4 goals this year. What's the secret to the success?
There's no secret. I mean, I've said this many times before, you're only as good as the team you play with. And I'm very happy with the team that I'm playing with. The back line's extremely strong. We've got sort of a good balance there with Jenny holding up and taking charge of the back line. Me and Jenny have got a really good relationship. As far as she does her job, I do my job. I don't tell her how to do hers. She doesn't tell me how to do mine. We've never had a conflict. So as long as we keep the harmony there, and in the midfield, it's very strong as well with, you know, a couple of new players coming back, likes of Megan Keogh playing her first game on the weekend back from injury and a bit of a rest, was just a great asset to the team. And we've got 2 young strikers up the front that are just putting away as many goals as they can whilst I'm keeping out as many goals as I can.
So you've never really had a confrontation between the back four at all this season, obviously. Only conceding 4 goals, there's never been a reason to, I suppose.
No, not at all. Like I said, I'm extremely happy with how the back line's performing. Obviously, there are things that I see that I might not always agree with. Sometimes Jenny taking the ball through the midfield, trying to score herself a goal, but you know what? I'll back her completely. She seems to do the job extremely well.
I understand you were back in goal this year after playing up front last year yourself and bagging an absolute shedful. So if it's not working for you, fancy going up for corners or something?
Oh, sure, why not? I mean, if they can do it internationally, why can't I do it locally? But I think Mike, our coach, might have a few words to say about that. But depending on what the scoreline is, I might give it a whirl.
So you were in goal at the AIS and then you came back to play for Woden Valley and you went up front and then you went back in goal, is that right?
No, played for the AIS, moved back to Canberra, signed up with Western Creek.
Western Creek, sorry.
It's close.
Always have problems with Western Creek and Woden Valley.
Kind of, just start with W, so you can understand. Played a great season up front. It was an interesting time. I haven't played on the field for a while now. And then we lost our goalkeeper, unfortunately, after pre-season. She's now moved on to Bell West. And Mike approached me and goes, look, Louis, what would you like to do? And I was like, well, look, you're the coach. You make the decision. I'll play wherever you want me to. And he goes, well, I like you playing goals. I was like, okay. So I just do what I have to do, I suppose.
So the ultimate team player and sacrificing the chance to score a few goals to keep them out.
Something like that. But like I said, I mean, we've got 2 great strikers. We've got young Krista at the front, who I think is only 15, 16 years old, and she's pocketed a few herself. Plus we've got Rachel as well that is doing a fabulous job with her speed, her skills and her strikes. So as long as they're doing their job scoring the goals, I'll do my job stopping them.
And you'd have thought, having only conceded 4 goals this season, having won 8 matches out of the 10 played so far, scoring a lot of goals at the other end, that you'd be cruising to the championship. But it's not so. You've got some competition up there.
Oh, definitely. Canberra League is very always unpredictable. you know, I was talking to Chris before that you can line up play, you can look at team sheets and go, yeah, that one there on paper looks like a stronger team, but when you come out on the park, it's a totally different story. You know, it's very hard to field a full strength squad in a team that, or in a league that's being constantly just weathered by the weather, by the grounds, by injuries, things like that. It's hard to always perform at your peak. So in the end, you just do what you can with the best you've got.
Despite there only being six teams in the Club Pink Premier League, it does provide certainly for very exciting games. You've got the likes of, as you mentioned, Woden Valley, more than capable of upsetting. We saw ANU who beat it, I suppose, the most informed team in the competition, Canberra City, on the weekend. You've got Belconnen who can defeat anyone on their day, including you guys, mm-hmm. who you guys suffered your first loss of the season to. Bell West, anyone can win, can't they?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, it's sometimes just the flick of a coin. Whoever can perform well on the day will perform well on the day. It doesn't really matter, you know, if you've got players that are injured or you've got a full-strength team. It just depends on the passion, how much you want it. And I think this season we've had a lot of changes in our team, a lot of people that haven't signed on with us again and a lot of people that have. So it's adapting to, you know, their strengths and weaknesses and trying to form a good team. And I think this year we've actually found a really good blend of players, both young and, you know, and our experienced players. So in using that, it I think it's come together really, really well. And I think, you know, once again, like last year, we'll be in the finals and hopefully this time we'll actually take home some silverware instead of watching another team take it away.
Now, you mentioned a few new girls in the teams. Where have they come from?
A couple of the players that we've actually gotten have come from other squads, such as Kate. She's come from ANU. We've got the likes of Krista, Regan and Claire that are young girls that have come from development squad that Mike's pushed through and gone, look, I think you guys have got some talent. I really like to see how you'd perform in a Premier League and brought them up. And to tell you the truth, they haven't disappointed. Obviously, their experience will build up as they get more games. But in saying that, they've over-exceeded their expectations. From my point of view, they're always surprising me, especially the young girls.
And a big game this weekend against Bell West. You're obviously looking forward to that one in the top of the table clash.
Yeah, that should be an interesting game. Hopefully the weather will play on our half and not rain again. but no, definitely, it's always a good game when we do play against Bell West. A lot of, you know, a lot of the girls are my friends. So, but in saying that, you know, what happens on the field just stays on the field, and we're very professional in that sense that, you know, the scoreline won't really reflect on anyone's friendship or anything like that unless we play badly, which won't happen.
I mean, there's only, like Chris was mentioning, only a few rounds left in the Club Pink Premier League, and we were looking at the table. On the weekend, it was a hard-fought match against Belconnen United, settled by a penalty, I believe. Mm-hmm. You've got Bell West this week. Chris was alluding to the fact that there's some really strong teams throughout the competition. But the fact there is only six teams in there, do you find sometimes that familiarity can breed contempt and it gets a bit dull?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, it's hard to sort of have the mindset of, you know what, yeah, we beat them last time, we'll just beat them again, because on the day, you never know. It could be just, you know, a penalty that separates, you know, a nil or draw. It could be anything. You've just got to all take that in consideration and take every game one step at a time and every minute, you know, as it comes, instead of sort of going into the game going, yeah, we flogged them 7-0 the previous time we played them, but, you know, who's to say that they're not going to come back and beat us 1-0? And that puts us, you know, a bit of a damper on me, because that means I've conceded a goal and I don't want to do that anymore.
And we're talking to Louisa Marzotto, Western Creeks.
That's it.
Answer to Edwin van der Sar. What was your motivation when you first pulled on the gloves? Because obviously it's not the most glamorous position on the field, and you know, when you're younger, not everybody wants to go in goal. It's the position. Who wants to go in goal? All of the faces look to the ground. And, was your motivation?
Wow. Like I said, it was more, you know, like you said then, it was you know, when someone asks who wants to go in goals, everyone sort of puts their head down, and I was kind of the first one to go, I'll give it a go. Let me jump around and wear the big gloves that don't fit and get all muddy and dirty, and, you know, mum and dad will take me home and wash my clothes. Now it's a little bit different. The motivation's more so on myself to go, okay, well, I've got to now prove to myself and my club that, you know, I am capable of doing the job, and I've set myself a target of not conceding any more than 10 goals in the season. And so I've already got to 4, and I think there's only 5 or 6 rounds to go. So I think I'm doing okay. But I'll be.
You were mentioning beforehand, you can remember every one of those goals, can't you?
I can. They're stenciled in my mind. And
they hurt.
I know, I wake up screaming sometimes. But no. As a goalkeeper, I mean, 4 goals is easier to remember than, you know, the, say, 20-odd goals that are conceded. So I do remember them all, and I play them over in my head when I get home and go, okay, well, I really should have done this a little bit better. I could have said this to the back line, organised them a lot quicker or positioned myself better. But at the end of the day, you take the good with the bad and you move on, because, I mean, a lot of young goalkeepers and even some professional goalkeepers tend to beat themselves around the head about it and go, well, oh, they don't let things go. They sort of focus on the negative that happened at that moment instead of going, okay, well, I've got 25 minutes to go. I'm going to make sure that 25 minutes is going to be an impressive 25 minutes and I'm not going to make the same mistake again.
Now, Russ, I don't know about you, but that seems like a pretty good mindset for a potential Canberra Women's League player.
Yes, certainly is. I mean, as we've mentioned before, I mean, I think the versatility that Louisa could bring to the squad as well, having the opportunities to play up front as well,
exactly,
and the ability to score goals. When you're a coach of any side, having someone who can play at both ends of the park and do either job equally well has got to be a bonus. You'd obviously be happy to take a position anywhere on the field in that squad.
Look, as far as I'm concerned, if I'm playing, it doesn't matter what position I'm in. I'll give it anything a go. I mean, when I first started playing soccer, I was a defender, and I've kind of moved up into the midfield and then up into the forward line, and then they've thrown me back in goals and then out last season playing around on the field. So, I mean, I enjoy it.
And finally, just before we wrap up here, how important is having a National Women's League in Canberra? You mentioned the young girls coming into your side, stepping up into the Women's Premier League, and having a league such as this, another stepping stone and something they can strive towards.
Most definitely. I think it's extremely important. What I feel is that it's been lacking. There's been a big gap between playing in a development squad here in Canberra and then not having another, like you said, a stepping stone to make to the Matildas or the AOS squad. So there's a lot of young players, even myself at one stage, that were lost and were like, that's a really big step, and you're not sure what direction and the motivation, the mindset that you need to set for yourself to get there. It was a bit of a blur, but I think if this comes about and it works out for everyone, I think we're going to have a lot of new Matildas coming through. I mean, Dialogic has actually, well, she's retired, and that, you know, pays the way for other players, for potential more Canberrans, even then. We've only got 3, so let's see if we can get some more in there.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully we hear plenty more about you in the coming few months. But again, thank you for joining us in the studio this week.
Very welcome.
And before we head on, after the break, we'll have a look at Aim. I'm not sure if anyone had a look at the blog this week, but Aim, very, how can you say it, confidently named the first Canberra A-League side. We'll tear that one to shreds in moments. And I believe he also caught up with Ned Zelick as well, but again, thank
Hi,
you.
Hi, I'm Sean Ongtong from the Newcastle Jets. You're listening to the Near Post on 2XX 98.3 FM. Go the Jets.
As mentioned, Eamon did put his reputation on the line by naming a Canberra A-League side. It's he used a fair few Canberra-born players in there. We'll just quickly go through the lineup. In goals, you've got Cody Larkin, then Sam Munro, Josip Simenik, Nikolai Topol-Stanley, Luke Pilkington, Dane Milanovic, tongue twister, Kasper Tafter, Sean Ongtong, Matthew Kemp, Taylor Beaton, Kofi Danning, and Adam Casey. Substitute, or potentially marquee players, Steve Malbronk, Deco, Adrian Mutu. What do you make of that, Russ?
Well, I know Damon's been away for a couple of weeks and
he's
obviously got some time
blown
on his hands. But yeah, it's good to see quite a lot of homegrown youngsters, homegrown players in there. Cody Larkin, we know a lot about from local in goal from the O'Connor Knights. He's a quality keeper. Obviously, there's some big names in there like Joe Simenich, Luke Pilkington, who's been making a name for himself lately. And then it's an interesting squad. His choice of marquees would be something to look at. Steve Melblanc, Deco, Adrian Mutu. I'm not sure how old Deco will be in 2010, probably about 33. It's a possibility. He's named some coaches as well, possibly Tom Samani, Ray Junner, Ned Zelic, Miran Blyberg, Paul Ocon, Milan Ivanovic, again, the tongue twister, or some Dutch bloke, maybe Gusidink for a run there. It's enough to get people talking, I think, and if you agree or disagree with what Eamon's got to say, feel free to log on to the blog and check it out.
Please send your comments through. Cody Loken in goal, very young fella. I think he's got a great potential ahead of him, though I think his age and just how young he is could have an impact. I think you can't look any further than if you're looking locally, the likes of, you know, Nathan Denham or Ben Chain with Bill Connan. Those are two goalkeepers who have proven themselves in the New South Wales Premier League and are very young, who'd be more than capable and I think more than willing to step up.
Well, as we found out with Louisa this evening, any successful team needs a good quality goalkeeper, a shot stopper that's going to keep the ball out of the net, concede as fewer goals as possible. You can build a team around a good goalkeeper. Cody's got a lot of potential. I tend to agree with what you're saying there, though. Nathan Denham, or probably one of the older guys, would have been a better choice.
Now, being a Tuggies man, you are, Russ, I think you'll agree with this one. Jeremy Butler as the supporters club leader.
Jeremy Butler, he's got a lot of potential, let's say, to lead the supporters club. He's vocal.
Never short of a voice, is he?
He certainly isn't. He's vocal. He leads the songs. He's passionate for the team. He's a very passionate Canberra football person. He was there when the Cosmos were playing every game. He would jump up and down in the wind and rain, singing his songs. There's a group of them, him and his fellow battalion members, they call them down at Tuggeranong, that have got the passion for the game and they really, really would want an A-League team and they'd sing for it.
Well, it looks like the ball's certainly rolling and so far, pretty good makeup. But I believe Eamon Flanagan caught up with Ned Zelic earlier on this week.
I'm joined now by Ned Zelic, former Socceroo and former Canberran. Ned, you've just heard recently of the news about a bid for a Canberra A-League team. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's just fantastic for football in Canberra that they're putting together a bid and hopefully a successful one. I mean, obviously, me, myself, growing up in Canberra, there's definitely a soft spot there for a team come from Canberra, and I'll definitely do you know, anything I can to offer that bid my support. I mean, I've personally seen so many kids with so much potential in Canberra, but it's like there's you come to a stage where there's nowhere else to go, sort of thing, when they hit a certain age group. So now, hopefully, if that bid is successful, kids will have a big door open for them with regards to their future in football.
Certainly will, Ned. I mean, I think what's happening is players like Andrew Bernal, yourself, Andrew Young, Amy Taylor, Joe Simonich, Carl Valeri, we're getting a whole heap of high-profile footballers giving their support, and it really is a new time for football in Canberra.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I mean, like I said, I'll be doing anything I can to help with this bid. I mean, obviously, I've retired now and I'm living overseas. But I want to be back in Australia as often as possible. I definitely don't want to lose contact to Australia and especially Canberra as well, where I grew up and you know, spent all my junior football years.
Who knows, so Ned? Maybe in the future we'll see you coaching a Canberra team. You never know.
That's down the track. But yeah, I mean, like you said, you never know. I mean, it's football. You can never rule out anything, and definitely down the track we'll see what's possible.
Ned, just to take you back very briefly, if you had some of your finer memories from your days at Canberra Croatia, as it was then, what are some of your memories of playing in Canberra?
I mean, obviously, you know, they were great moments. I mean, all my junior years there with Canberra. But just the city itself, you know, I mean... I grew up there and did all of my schooling there, and I've still got so many friends there, and I just love coming back there, you know. I mean, obviously, I've still got family there, so... and for me, it's always a big buzz to come back to Canberra.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have your support, Ned. What are your immediate plans, you know, I suppose, work-wise, will you be remaining in football?
Yes, definitely. And I've started doing some things with regards to player management. Since I've gotten back to Germany after I retired from football, so I've started doing a few things there. I would definitely like to set up a few football camps back in Australia, doing some junior development for kids. So I'm planning a few things with regards to that, and we'll see what comes of that. But, you know, for me, the most important thing, like now after I'd retired from football, was spending a bit of time with my family, obviously. You know, it wasn't a difficult time for them because of the fact that I was all over the place, pretty much everywhere. In the whole world and kind of missed seeing my kids grow up a little bit. But now, as I said, there's a few things that I'm planning and we'll see what comes of it.
Well, we wish you all the best, Ned, and hopefully we see this Canberra bid get over the line.
Yeah, again, that'd be fantastic. And let's get everyone we can to support this bid because it would be a massive thing for Canberra.
There you have it, Eamon Flanagan catching up with Ned Zelick, unveiling a potential Canberra coach there. But we're very quickly running out of time this evening. Make sure you get down to your Service One Members Banking branch to sign up for your A-League Foundation memberships. I believe 100 or so, or possibly 200, have already been sold, which is fantastic to see. But still a fair way to go, so please get out there and support local A-League. But before we wrap up, a big thank you to Louise again for joining us in the studio. Russ, thanks again for coming in this week.
No worries, Chris.
Big thank you to Eamon Flanagan, Simon, Capital Football, and everyone in post-production for their generous support. And remember, if you're going to the near post, get there first.
The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.